Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC. Welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. Luke Stuckmeyer and David Kaplan in our NBC Sports Chicago studios. And at least once a week, we're going to try and bring you an interview podcast with a special guest. And we think our first one is exactly that. He helped build the Cubs from 1995 to 2011, taking over as the general manager in 2002. He's now a special assistant to Yankees general manager Brian Cashman. He is, of course, our guy, Jim Hendry. We talked with Jim about just about everything from the past to the present. I wanted to know what he thought about signing big money free agents. There's plenty of them out there this year. Jim, there's some big money free agents coming out this offseason. It's not a new thing to baseball. I think back to Soriano signing. How much pressure is there on an organization when they bring in a guy at a huge contract and you're not sure what you're going to have? Like in Soriano's case, if he doesn't tear his quad, I'm not sure what the rest of his Cubs career looks like. How much pressure does that put on a team when you write a check that large?
Well, it's always the most dangerous thing. I mean, free agency for great players, especially pitching, as we've all found out, when you invest long-term, people get hurt. But there's nothing more expensive and risky in the game than long-term contracts or free agency and free agents. And we've all have to do it at certain times of their career, and you just kind of, you do the best you can. You do the medicals the best you can. You do the makeup the best you can. But it doesn't always work out the way you write it up. Sometimes it does, and it's a difference maker, and it puts you over the top. Other times, you know, if you have a 6 or 7 year deal, you can be gravely disappointed after a couple, or people have career-ending or threatening injuries. And also, it's also a judgment of how people handle that kind of money. So you have to know the makeup inside out. You know, without... you know, ever knowing how it's going to be, people change some after they get paid that much of guaranteed money. So you're really in real risky business. That's why the best thing you can always do is develop as many players of your own as you can and keep the pipeline going so you don't be in that business all the time or too often. But it's extremely risky.
The late Kevin Towers said that when you signed Kosuke Fukudome, I remember interviewing him shortly after that because they had been in there. San Diego thought they were going to get him, and he said, that broke my heart. He said they got a kid who's going to be an amazing major league player, and he just never quite took off. Why do you think that Kosuke, who was a herald at signing, you beat a lot of good teams to get him, why do you think it never quite clicked?
You know, it's a heck of a question because when he arrived, and even the second year, he played very, very well the first half of the season. You know, he made the All-Star team one time, and he was a terrific defender in right field. Never got his due, Gold Glove caliber in right the year we moved him to center and took that gamble. He wasn't quite the same. But I don't know whether he wore down, you know, faster or wasn't used to playing 155 to 162 games. You know, the travel in Japan is different, 2 days off a week and, you know, 1 or 2 hour bullet train rides. I don't really have a definitive answer because there were times, as you know, he not only made the All-Star team, he played like an All-Star for a while, but never could put the whole year together, you know, in his tenure. And it was a sign that we thought at the time was perfect because we were left-handed short, which was really on me. And he kind of closed the gap. We thought we had a guy that was going to hit for a high average, maybe 15 homers, but hit 300 and play world-class defense, which he did. And when his bat went short, it really kind of took its toll on us as a club and hurt us.
Jim, after the late, great Ron Santo, left the Cubs, it was a long time before a third baseman was really good for the Chicago Cubs. Getting Aramis Ramirez and Kenny Lofton from the Pirates, if you had to go back and let's say pick one, do you have a favorite move that you made when you were with the Cubs? I mean, that one worked out unbelievably.
Yeah, I would say that would be up there, and maybe acquiring Derek Lee for, I think it was Hesop Choi and a kid named Mike Nannini. And maybe the first one, because that was my first year as a GM, and it was just one of those years where kind of everything, we weren't very good the year before, and I don't think anybody thought we would be that year, but it was, even started in the offseason when we traded for Grizzlanic and Karros for Todd Hundley, which was a big move for us, and those two guys never got their due for how good a year that was. And then I think we were like seven back a week before the deadline when we made the Ramirez and Lofton trade, and I think if we'd have waited another week, we might have been 10 or 12 back and then not even done it. So that one probably was the most important. And then when we had the ending, which we had and didn't win the game 6 or 7, I thought in the offseason getting Derek after he helped beat us with the Marlins in such good fashion at 28 years old, I thought that was, and bringing in Greg, I thought that made us even better in 04, which we were. But we just had the injuries for Woody and Pryor, and it never quite overcame that and fell a little bit short. But those probably two were the best two.
Winter meetings are coming up here in less than a month. What is it like for a general manager or front office guy? Because for reporters like us, we would get to meet with you in your suite. You were always very gracious, giving us, okay, for background, here's who I'm talking to. Don't believe that one because that's not true. And so we would know at least where we were focusing our efforts. But what's it like from a general manager's perspective?
Same thing. Me personally, I always liked them because most enjoyable parts of the job for me were the action of the deadline trades or getting new players. It was always like, right or wrong, it's like the draft room. You always leave the draft room thinking you had a great draft. That's just human nature. But I liked one of my most favorite things was acquiring new players, changing the roster, taking some chances, dealing with agents, and over time you hope your reputation is good enough that you, are a trusted guy to deal with, and whether it's agents or other GMs. That was a very fun part of the job for me. It can be very stressful. Because, the old days, you kind of didn't want to go home from the winter meetings without something done because you were afraid, hey, if you don't have your team set by January 1st, that may be what you're lining up with in February. It's different now, obviously. There's a lot of free agents still available in January, and trades are made later. But back then, it was 90% of your club usually had to be done by New Year's, so there was a little stress of, we better get a couple of these things done when we get off the plane, whether it was New Orleans or Vegas or wherever the winter meetings were. So you found yourself like totally bunkered down in your room, nonstop for 4 or 5 days without going outside, So it was pressure, but it was fun. And, when you're the Cubs at the time, a lot of people wanted to play there just like they do now. And, so we had the reputation too that, you wheel and deal and you try to change the deck a little bit and shuffle the deck. And whether it's Jim Hendry or Theo or Cash or whoever, Kenny Williams in his day, you always have certain people you knew you could kind of count on to make some deals with or get the straight shot and move on. So I always thought the winter meetings were another real fun part of the job.
Time to take a break here on the Cubs Talk podcast. When we come back, we'll talk more with Jim Hendry, the former Cubs general manager, now with the New York Yankees.
Cubs authentic fans, the My Teams app by NBC Sports is your home for Cubs highlights, articles, and more. For the best Cubs coverage anytime, anywhere, download the My Teams app today.
Welcome back to the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. We're talking with Jim Hendry, the former Cubs general manager with the Cubs from 95 to 2011. Jim, I know 2006 is one you'll never forget, Orlando, Florida. I think all three of us were there. You signed Ted Lilly from a hospital bed. A doctor there basically saved your life. Can you walk us through how that whole 2 or 3 day stretch played out?
Well, it's kind of feel kind of awkward talking about myself, another story, but it was kind of like I didn't feel real good for a couple of days, but we knew we had to get things done. We did not have a good year the year before, and John McDonough came in as the president, who I had a good relationship with, and the Tribune was going to sell, so it was kind of like, hey, we've got some plenty of money, go get things done. And Ted was a big key to us. We needed pitching. There wasn't a ton of free agent pitching on the market. Referring back to Stan Zielinski again and Ken Kravick, they, at our organizational meetings before we went to those meetings, they were pushing hard for Ted, thought he was kind of a big sleeper in the thing. So it came down to us, and I remember Brian Cashman, I had a real good relationship, but Brian, Ted kind of wanted to go to the Yankees first, and Brian told me that if he did not sign Egawa, left-handed pitcher from Japan, then he was going to take Ted. So I kind of knew that if the Yankees wanted Ted, we weren't going to get him. We kind of were ahead of the other clubs, or four or five clubs wanting him. Anyhow, so what's overplayed in the thing was I did sign Ted. I was getting the second EKG. All of a sudden, there was some worry about it. But the truth of the matter was I didn't know how serious it was when I got the phone call from Ted's agent. I guess in hindsight, the thing that I'm still confused is I don't know why I had the phone in my hand on the journey, to be honest. But it got overplayed like I was on my deathbed and I signed Ted Lilly. I didn't know for another half hour, an hour after we'd done that I was going to have a procedure that night. So that parts of it, it's a good story and gets expanded a little bit over the years, but that's the reality of it. But it did happen, and certainly glad. And Ted Lilly was really good for us here, and every penny we paid him, and one of the toughest competitive guys that we had here.
Have you seen Wrigleyville since they've got Gallagher Way, the park open, the office building, the hotel, the ridiculous clubhouse that's so unbelievable? Have you gotten a chance to see all of that?
Yeah, the last couple summers I've been, and in fact, Randy Bush and gave me a tour a year ago, and Theo was nice enough to have that, gave me the World Series ring and had a presentation up in the offices and went through the tunneling to get to the clubhouse. And yeah, it's just phenomenal. I applaud everyone with the Cubs and the Rickett family, how they've done such magical things here without taking away the great, great tradition and the heritage of Wrigley Field. I mean, you couldn't have wrote a script 10 years ago of how it's come along and how modern it is and how financially lucrative it is. So yeah, it's special, and I still go there when I'm home in the summer and take my kids when I'm not working. And yeah, it'll always be a great place for me. 17 years, and it's wonderful to see how things have progressed.
What did getting that ring mean to you? Because I mean, we talked about some of the guys that are on the roster and that you helped build. You got them so close, but it didn't happen before you left. What did the ring mean to you when you got it?
Well, I think having perspective, it means a lot to me that number one, Tom and with Theo would think that much of me to do that, which they didn't have to. It was 4 or 5 years after I left. It's not the same as you if you did it yourself as the GM, obviously, which was a tremendous goal of mine starting from, 03 on, and just didn't quite finish it off. So I applaud the work that Theo did, as everyone knows, after I left in the next 5 years, and the commitment Tom and his family have made. But it meant a lot to me from that end of it that your 17 years of work were noticed. But at the same time, it's not like, I feel like, I was that big a deal for them doing it. I think with the work they did, obviously, after I left, is 90% of the reasons why the Cubs won, not the stuff that I did before them.
Last question I have for you. So now that, the guys that you probably would have traded for back in the day are out of the game, is there one free agent signing or trade that you thought you were going to get done that didn't get done for some big-name player? You go, well, now that he's retired, I can tell you I came this close to getting so-and-so. Who is that?
Well, I tell you what, just off the I'd have to think that through. I haven't had that question asked. I tell you one thing that might not have seemed significant at the time, but I wish I would have done it. We were going really good in 08 and had a lead in the division. Looked like we were going to win the division. I think we won 97 or 8 games. And Fukudomi had not gone all the way south yet, but was starting to slide. And Jimmy Edmonds had given us a lift that year. And as you remember, we had a really good team. And we went up to Milwaukee and it swept them. Our lead was good. But at the deadline, I had a chance to pick up Raul Ibanez from Seattle for a good prospect, but not an elite one, and who I won't mention his name, but never really did much in the big leagues for later on for us or somebody else. And I remember us getting together and Lou and I and Randy Bush kicking it around, and it was kind of like, it might have made us a little too crowded out there, and, you know, somebody's going to sit every day with Sorey and Edmonds and Fook, and we had somebody, another fourth guy. And at the time, it was kind of, maybe, maybe not. And obviously, as the season progressed and then we got into the playoffs against the Dodgers, their right-handed pitching was really good. You know, Kuroda and I think it was Billingsley. I mean, everybody they threw out there right-handed was really effective, and we weren't left-handed enough. And by that time, some guys had really kind of taken, you know, fallen down. So I think if I had one to do over that was really meaningful, there might have been some bigger ones at the time. That one, I think, might have made more impact because we were really good. I thought the best two teams in baseball in 08 were the Phillies and us. And it obviously proved out we got swept by the Dodgers, and the Phillies went on to be the world champs.
I do remember I went to eat at a restaurant called Heaven on 7 because I had gotten a tip that you might be coming there with a free agent for lunch. You end up walking in looking at me like, really? Really? You're going to be here when I'm doing
this?
Was
that Pudge Rodriguez thing?
No, that was you walking in with Jim Thome.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jim and I were old friends. And, you know, for how well you could be. I mean, he grew up in Illinois, and I'd got to know him over the years. Loved Jim Thome. And Jim Thome, I'm convinced today, if we didn't have Derek Lee, would have been a Cub. You know? And it was just Derek was really good, and neither one of them could have played anywhere else. I think that's the timing's right on that, and you may help me with that. But I remember having a couple chats with Jim over the years, and I know part of him, you know, would have wanted to, but I think that's the recollection of why.
Yeah, I think you had Hesop Choi just coming up, and then you moved Choi to get Lee.
Right, that's what it was. And yeah, and so obviously Derek played great for us, and, you know, if it wasn't for Albert Pujols, Derek would have been the MVP once or twice. But yeah, I mean, who wouldn't have wanted Jimmy?
Yep.
You know, if it was an American League team, then I would feel comfortable saying that probably would have happened.
Jim, did you just say Pudge Rodriguez was almost a Cub?
No, not always a Cub. Oh. I just his age. No. He did come to Wrigley, and we met, and I think you're right. It wasn't Heaven on 7. It might have been Tavern on Rush, but we did have lunch, and that was the off season. We couldn't make it all work financially at the time. I think that was maybe my first or second.
Yeah, he ended up signing with the Marlins.
Yeah, that didn't help us either, did it, that year?
No.
but we never got close or even exchanged numbers or anything like that, if my recollection.
This has been a lot of fun. Jim, thanks so much for all your time. Best of luck in New York, and we hope to see you around sometime soon.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
All the best, Jimmy. Good luck.
Thanks. Take care.
See ya.
Thank you very much. That'll do it for this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. Our thanks to Jim Hendry for joining us.